Hey, Chevra, so we're here trying to do the Ratzon of the Ribbono Shel Olam. We're trying to understand the Ribbono Shel Olam's Chachma. And today, tonight, our effort to understand the wisdom of HaKadosh Baruch Hu involves understanding Sota Daf Dalet Amid Beis. The Gemara in Sota Dalet Amid Aleph had a whole variety of different shittos about how long the shiur of Stira is. Gemara in Sota Daf Dalet Amid Beis. Amar Reb Yitzchak Bar Yosef, Amar Reb Yochanan, Ko Echad VeEchad Ba'atzmo Shi'er. All of these various measurements for how long Stira is each individual made a calculation based on the amount of time it takes for that individual himself to have Tchilas Biyah, to have the din of Ha'aro'ah. So, frek the Gemara, ay, v'ha'iko ben Azai, d'lo nasiv. Ay, isn't there ben Azai who never got married? So the Gemara has three answers. Let's go, Chevra. What's answer one?
He got married and divorced.
Okay, so he knew what to do. Answer two.
He learned it from his Rebbe
is interesting because Lecha'ora, what type of Rebbe is giving this type of lesson? Right, you gotta like ask that question. What was that, Sophia?
I said your name. We're doing the
sugya
in your shir.
Oh. Torah Hivlum Aranitzarech. And that's the Gemara in Brachos talks about one of the Amoraim who climbs under his Rebbe's bed. Right. So the idea basically is that there is a certain dimension of Torah that is often not the type of thing that should come up at a Shabbos table discussion, perhaps, but it is Torah. And that's what the Gemara says. Mi Rabbi Shmuley, he learned it from his Rebbe. Answer number three in the Gemara is Sod Hashem Li Reyav. The Ribbono Shel Olam has certain secrets that he conveys to those who fear God. The Maharatz Chiyus asks a question. He says, Sod Hashem Li Reyav. Kadosh Baruch Hu conveys secrets. It sounds like this is like a divine idea that comes down, and Ben Azai got it from the Ribbono Shel Olam. Frek the Maharatz Chiyus, Lo Basham Ayim Hi. The Torah in Parashas Nitzavim says that Torah is given to us. God wants you to use your mind. Right? That's the idea. So the Ribbono Shel Olam wants you to use your mind. He's not going to just tell you secrets. In fact, we don't paskin based on what we hear from the Shamayim. The famous Gemara in Bava Metzia Mem Tes about Tanur Shel Achnoi, right? The walls of the Beis Medrash, right? This way, that way, they are like at an angle. Because you're not supposed to learn halacha from what the Ribbono Shel Olam sends down in a bas kol. So what does Soid Hashem Li Reyav mean? What does it mean that we're learning it from the Ribbono Shel Olam? Does anyone want to try to answer the Maharatz Chiyus' question? It's a good kasha, no?
I don't know, maybe it's not that like mamash like a bas kol that came out, but just when a person is like a talmid or talmid achacham, like you're just like, understand like the you're like someone's kasha.
But doesn't Sod Hashem Li Reyav sound like it comes down as like a secret bit of information? That really sounds like, I mean, what you're trying to do is like, oh, he was like very frum. But saying that he's very frum doesn't take away from the fact that this is not information that should be coming naturally, right? And HaKadosh Baruch Hu is giving that information. We saw the kasha, lo b'shamayim hi. So, it's a kasha. It's a problem. There are, to the best of my knowledge, two ways to answer this kasha that I'm aware of. The Maharatz Chiyus, in his essay, sends us to the Shem HaGedolim of the Chida, Ma'areches Yud, Erech Reb Yaakov HeChosid. Basically, there's a fellow called the Chida. The Chida is kind of awesome and cool. He wrote like hundreds of Svarim, no? The Chida basically was a Mashulach, and he's going around places, and he's collecting manuscripts from libraries. He's really awesome. So the Chida also has a book called the Shem HaGedolim, where he gives us like some basic information about Svarim and basic information about Talmidei Chachamim. You can learn a lot about various people just by seeing what the Chida says about that individual. So he has an entry called Reb Yaakov HaChosid. Reb Yaakov HaChosid, he says, is the person to whom the Shutmin HaShamayim were addressed. There is a sefer called Shailos HaTshuvos Min HaShamayim. basically, there's a fellow. He was called Reb Yaakov. Apparently, he was a chassid. That does not mean he wore a shtreimel. It means he was just, like, very religious. And this Reb Yaakov, a chassid, used to have an interlocutor who came to him at night, and he would ask this person questions. Should I wear the tefillin of Rashi or the tefillin of the Rabbeinu Tam? And the interlocutor said to him, oh, you know what? Until Bayis Shlishi, you wear the tefillin of Rashi. After Bayis Shlishi comes, you wear the tefillin of the Rabbeinu Tam. Stuff like that. So he asked questions to this malach or whatever it is. So, like, how the heck do you have a shut min hashamayim? Isn't that a violation of lo bashamayim hi? So the chidah in that entry basically says that maybe lo bashamayim hi means that I can't learn new halachos from shamayim. However, if there is something that is an unresolved machlaikas, so then maybe you can resolve an unresolved machlaikas by having a baskel or something come down. That's what he says. It's a nice idea. But l'cha'ora, it really does not sound like the Gemara in Bava Metzia Memtes, and the sugya of Tanur Shalachnai works with it at all. Right? The whole sugya of the Tanur Shalachnai is like, you can't bring a raya from Shamayim to decide in the machlokas. So, I don't know. I'm not exactly sure what it means. The Tosfos HaRosh, however, has a second mahalach over here. If you look at the Tosfos HaRosh on our daf, Tosfos HaRosh writes that maybe I only say lo b'shamayim hi when it comes to inyanim of halacha. But if something is an inyanim mitzias, so maybe I don't apply lo b'shamayim hi. The question in our Gemara about how long the shear of stira is fundamentally ko echad ve'echad ba'atmo shi'er. It's fundamentally an inyan in mitzias rather than halacha. And because it's an inyan in mitzias, so therefore I can prove it min hashamayim. That is a mahalach again. If you look in the Taisus HaRosh on this daf, he writes, Hasod shenisgalalo was im hayanosoi kachayimis akev. How long would it take him were he to be married? The ein lafarish kamashir stira nisgalalo. Because it can't be how long shir stira is. It can't be that it's coming to be megala a halachic issue. Because lo b'shamayim hi. That's what the Tosfos HaRosh seems to say. Again, it doesn't really help for the Shut Min HaShamayim, no? The Shut Min HaShamayim is still a very mysterious book. We don't know exactly what's going on over there. If any of you are interested in looking at something interesting about dreams in halacha, and about the role of the supernatural being machriya halacha. So if anyone wants to do, like, let's say, theoretically, an undergraduate thesis about this, it's kind of easy, because all you have to do is read Reb Rufi Margolius's Hakdama to the Shut Min HaShamayim, and you'll see most of the sources. Of course, if you decide to write about dreams and halacha, and you do it in Stern College, you better make sure you quote Professor Kanerfogel's recent articles on this topic, because if you don't, bad things will happen to you. Okay, weiter. Zakli Gemara. Darish Reb Avira. Zimna Nam Lamishmeid Reb Ami, Zimna Lamishmeid Reb Asi. Reb Avira said the following statement. Sometimes the name of this one, sometimes the name of that one. Kala Ocha Lechem Beli Natilas Yadayim Ki Iluba Al Isha Zona. If a person eats bread without washing the hands, it's as if he had relations with a prostitute. Shenema ki be'ad isha zona ad kikar lechem. Be'ad isha zona ad kikar lechem. It sounds like there's some equation between the zona and kikar lechem. The Gemara asks, what do you mean? The ad and the bit and the be'ad don't match up. Right? That's why Rashi learns, bi'ad sounds like for the avera that you did, and ad tells you the extent of the onesh, and that's the Gemara's question. Amar Rava, hai ba'ad isha zona ad kikar lechem, ba'ad kikar lechem ad isha zona mebayalei. It's like written the wrong way. Ela Amar Rava, ka'ba isha zona l'soif mevakesh kikar lechem. So that's going to the Gemara is, if a person has relations with the zona, the end result will be that the person will end up very poor. I tell you the story about the din Torah I sat on not so long ago. a fellow had an addiction that he was going to prostitutes, and his wife found out about it when their entire bank account was emptied out, and the guy totally destroyed the credit rating for the family. Not so good. That's what this Gemara means, no? If a person is attracted to these types of things, the person will end up with no money. The funny thing about that Din Torah was that, right, they got divorced. And what they're fighting about is marital assets. No? There are no marital assets. All the money is gone. They're really fighting about who owns what percentage of the family debt. Right, this is like a nutty type of Din Torah. What?
Shouldn't he owe all of it?
Not necessarily. In other words, again, it's hard to cheshbon out exactly how much, and we'll just leave it where we are. Is that, Sophia, you'll forgive me for this? We're not pursuing this one further. Thank you very much. Okay, so the original statement in the Gemara is really interesting, that there's some equation between not doing the Tilas Yadayim and being Ba'al Isha Zona. What is that equation? Who can explain this one to me? So if you look on the side of the Gemara, there's a Taisa Shans. You see it? Where is Shans, by the way?
France.
What's it called in English?
Sans.
S-E-N-S is Shans. Right? Fine. So the Taisa Shans on the side of the Gemara, right, that when a person, Kesha Ocha, below Netila, have a Achila Hefker, Vizona Zu Mufkeresi. That when a person eats without Netilas Yadayim, it's like the Achila's Hefker, it's like plain eating. And the Zona, by definition, is a woman who is Mufkeres. That's what Taisa Shans adds. The idea might be, just like to flip it a teeny bit, Zona is a woman who lacks Kedushin. By definition, the Zona is that she's not married. Eating without Netilas Yadayim means that you're lacking Kiddush, you're not adding Kedusha to what you're eating. The Karen Ora adds a teeny bit to this, and he writes that the notion of Netilas Yadayim is that we elevate our activities to a place of Kedusha. The Ribbono Shel Olam gave us hands. The Ribbono Shel Olam gave us the ability to act in the world. We could do our activities in a way that spreads Kedusha to the world, that spreads the Ribbono Shel Olam in the world. Or we could just do mundane activities. We do Netilas Yadayim fundamentally when we eat bread. Bread comes from wheat. According to one of the Tanoim in Maseches Sanhedrin, the Eitz She'achal Mimenu Adam HaRishon was a chita. No? Wheat, bread, represents the original Aveira. That original Aveira basically came about because a person, Adam, was overcome with his taiva, and it was just like a physical act. Chava, Adam, was overcome with taiva, it's just a physical act. There was no kedusha that was brought into it. Had they waited, it would have been mutter, according to many opinions. The basic idea is that the Ribbono Shel Olam wants us to elevate our otherwise mundane activities. And in order to elevate our otherwise mundane activities, we have to do Netilas Yadayim. Take those Yadayim, which are usually involved in day-to-day quotidian actions, and elevate them. Similarly, the problem with Izona is that the person is just looking after Taiva rather than trying to take an action which should be an action of Kedusha. the same act could be one of pure physical taiva, or could be a way of bringing the Ribbono Shel Olam, bringing Kedusha into the world. And the difference between Ba'al Isha Zona and the act of Kedusha is the same as the difference between eating bread with Netilas Yadayim and eating bread without Netilas Yadayim. Good? Something like that. Whatever. Okay, weiter. Next Gemara. Amreb Zreka. Amreb Lazar. Kamizal Zom Netilas Yadayim Nekar Min Ha'olam. If a person Mizal Zom Netilas Yadayim, what does Nekar Min Ha'olam mean? Taisvis is bothered by a stira or a question that the word nekar min ha'olam seems to mean misa, but the Gemara in Shabbos has a different punishment called getting poor. There is a third source that if a person mizals on the tilas yadayim, the person is chayiv nidoy. No? That's a line in the Mishnah in Idyos. Right, the Mishnah discusses Akavya ben Mahalalel, and whether Akavya was Nisnada, whether Akavya was put into Nidui. Right, Nidui is some sort of Cherem. Cherem basically means that you should drop dead. Right, that's what it means. Cherem is like the same gematria as Ramach Evarim. Basically saying that this curse should enter your 248 limbs and you should die. That's what Cherem is. Nidui is the same type of idea as Cherem, no? You should die. It's a curse. Not good. Don't try it. So now, there are three possibilities in Shas as to what the punishment for being mezalz on the Tilos Yadayim is. Is the punishment, like our Gemara says, that you die? Is the punishment that you become poor, like the Gemara in Shabbos says? Or is the punishment nidui, like the Mishnah in Idyos says? How does Rashi answer the kasha? Why there are three sources? How does Taisus answer the kasha? Ms. Engel.
I don't remember Rashi.
Okay.
Okay. I think Tosfos is that he says is that anytime you have any form of zilzul, it's a nag karmina olam situation. Nag karmina olam really means anita, because anita in a sense is worse than anita.
That's correct, but there is one other connection, Tosfos, I don't think you spelled out. Tosfos writes that there's a difference between one who habitually does not do netilas yadayim and one who occasionally doesn't do netilas yadayim. If you are the type of person who does not do netilas yadayim all the time, that's like your thing. That, I don't believe in netilas yadayim. No, I'm not shomer netila, right? Something like that. So if a person, that's a new expression, no? I just came up with it right now. Not bad, right? So if a person makes that his or her statement, so Taisa says, oh, then you get the worst punishment. Then you get anius. Poverty is worse than death, according to Taisa. Why the heck is poverty worse than death, by the way?
Because you suffer.
Because it's dragged out. You suffer. Right. If you die one time, okay, you don't feel it afterwards. Right? Poverty, mamish, yeder tug. Every day, day in, day out, you feel it. Poverty is worse than death. That's what Taisus. Taisus does not deal with the source of nidui. No. But apparently, nidui is an einish that occurs bidei Adam. Bezdin puts you in nidui. And that's not the topic of conversation in our Gemara. Our Gemara is talking about an einish bidei Shemayim. So our Gemara says, Nekar min ha'olam, God will kill you. There's another Gemara that says, the Gemara in Shabbos says, you'll become poor. Again, it means that God will take away your money. Taisus is bothered by which is which. How come there are two separate punishments? And for Taisus, if you do it habitually, you get the worst onesh, which is anios. If you do it occasionally, you get the lesser of the evils, which is death. Right? The pasuk says, "Tov mehamov salachasidav." What's that pasuk? If you're a chasid, you end up just dying. But if you're worse than that, you get an einish like. Right, that goes on. There's like two opinions in Rashi in the Shiras Hayom about the bad mitzrim versus the good mitzrim. Which ones are going up and down in like the whirlpool, and which ones died right away? No? So those two opinions are basically, is it better to die right away, or is it better to suffer? This was a machlokes among medieval philosophers. What is a better sort of punishment? The death penalty or life imprisonment? So the Italian medieval philosopher Beccaria had a chiddush that Beccaria tainad that we should be opposed to the death penalty because death isn't so bad. Right? It's much worse to have life imprisonment than the death penalty. So therefore, we should just have life imprisonment. That's Beccaria's taina. Other philosophers, I forgot who, I haven't chazed medieval philosophy since college, but other philosophers, taina, can sign that life imprisonment is objectively a worse punishment than death. However, if I want a punishment to be a deterrent, so a person doesn't do crime, right, that's why governments punish people, right? We want to deter people from stealing, robbing, pillaging, etc., no? So if it's a deterrent, so you have to try to figure out what scares people more. You hear about poverty. You know, you think it's not so bad, no? In Metzias, attack is worse. But people think it's not so bad. They think, oh, death is worse. Who says death is so bad? No? So the machlokes between Beccaria and the other philosophers, no, did any of you do this like in philosophy? Beccaria has a book called On Crimes and Punishments. It's like 50 pages. It's like a really short book. It's kind of cool, actually. Okay. So that's part of the medieval conversation about the death penalty versus life imprisonment. The more modern conversation is basically about whether government meets out punishment in a fair sort of way. The fact that people with a particular skin color are much more likely to get the death penalty than people with a different skin color might indicate that it is not done in a fair way across the board, and that is against, I know you're Canadian, it's against the U.S. Constitution, I'll call upon him, and therefore, that's like a practical way of looking at the death penalty conversation today. No? Is this something that my wife teaches? Yeah, probably.
Maybe in AP Gov. Not in A+.
Okay. So there you have it. So basically, according to Taisvis, poverty is worse than death. Probably Taisus means it in an objective sense. If you're mezalzel, or material seed, I'm tamid, so therefore you get poverty. What about Rashi?
Wait,
huh?
If you just do it a few times, then you're...
Then you die.
Yeah.
Right, you know, if you just
like, I get part of the argument, but the other part doesn't make any sense.
If you mezalzel up a netilah seidaim once or twice, right, if you go through a day or two that you're not shomer netilah, so then you're going to just die. What's so bad? But if you make a...
Wait, no, seriously, it really doesn't make sense.
I'm just learning a taisus with you. Don't blame me, as I stay in taisus.
I mean, also,
okay, so
when
mezalza means I make a mezalza means I'm making a conscious decision not to keep the din. Now again, there is a discussion in Shulchan Aruch and Kuf Nun Ches, and I forgot exactly which sif, about let's say someone is holich b'midbar, doesn't have water. Remember as kids, like every kid, I like this thing, all you have to do is like put a plastic bag on your hands. Right? It like solves all problems. It's like, there are two things that solve all problems in Judaism. You say Nishin Shabbos Keret, or you put a plastic bag on your hand. It like solves every problem in Yiddishkeit.
Is when kids think that they don't have to bench because they didn't wash.
Oh, that's right. It's like, it's kind of amazing. We have like this type of, Again, I don't know if you're keeping up with the conversation in tradition about the responses to Dr. Soloveitchik's article, but mimetic tradition lives very long on kids' buses where they have, like, this thing, right? That, oh, yeah, yeah, you don't have the bench because you didn't wash, right? And yeah, I didn't daven Shacharis, why should I daven Mincha? And, like, I didn't keep Shabbos last week, why should I keep it this week? Those types of things, right? I didn't. So whether you have to wash if you don't, the pashtus is you have to wash even though you don't touch the bread. I mean that's what?
You're on the bus. That's what it is.
Right. So you're on the bus. This is the shaila. You're on the bus. What do you do? So it really says in Shulchan Aruch, it depends. Is there water within 4 mil in front of you or 1 mil behind you? 4 mil means what? 72 minutes of traveling time. Have fun. Right? That's the real din. The real din is like covering up your hand. Yeah, if you're holeich b'midbar taka. If you're really in the middle of the desert, then we could discuss like putting a plastic bag on your hand. Hello, Ms. Engel.
So what if you have water on the bus and you also have a plastic bag and you wash into the bag and then seal it afterward? So you're like really clever and someone holds a bag.
Yeah, you. That's great.
And you're good.
Yeah, of course. Okay. Right. Now, the thing is that the water that you wash Mayim Rishonim for, technically speaking, that water does not become tainted. Mayim Achreinim water becomes tainted.
Yes.
Right? That's something... Fine. That's like...
But you can't use a water bottle to wash.
Why not?
Because the hole's not big enough.
Wait, what?
Are you drinking?
Wait, I thought you
don't
wash your water bottle because you drink from
it.
Right?
You can wash with a water bottle. You just make sure that you control...
No,
If you have some dexterity, you could do it.
No, I don't think it's a matter of...
You hold your hand. We'll talk about these halachas of how you hold your hands in a few minutes. We'll get there, right?
Wait, what's the water bottle?
Yeah, are you allowed to drink from the water bottle after you use it to wash?
The water that remains in the water bottle is fine. Why not?
I don't know.
You can't wash from the water. If I drink from the water bottle already, that's right. Shh. If I already drank from the water bottle, so the water could be possible because it was nasa bo malacha. Right? There is a din. Right? There is a din that once you did malacha with the water, you're not supposed to drink it. But the only water that I did the malacha with is the water that I poured on my hands or the water that I drank. Right?
And what
okay.
If there are like little microbugs in the water?
Copepods. Copepods.
Can you wash with that?
Why not?
I don't know.
Hey, by the way, you could wash until you're dying with honey. I always thought this is like the weirdest thing ever.
Is it like all the different things?
You take a thing of honey and then. Well, I really don't understand is how you could wash my macaronim with honey. That I mamish don't get.
Either water or honey, those
honey
are the two things.
No, no. Yad shachatam.
So blood is one of them. I'm not crazy.
What?
That's all the things, like the dipping stuff.
Yeah.
And blood is one of them.
Correct.
Okay.
I don't know why you wash it in blood.
Okay, now we're going too far afield. Okay, Fevra, let's try to bring this one back home. So according to the Balei HaTosfos, there's basically two separate sugyas entirely. Our sugya says you die. If you die, if you go through a brief stage, right, you are not shomer netila, shomeret netila. However, if a person makes a decision that I'm not doing it, if a person is mezalzel entirely, tumid, then the person gets the worst punishment called death. Does Rashi agree with Tysus, ladies?
Not death.
Huh?
Not death. Poverty.
No, he says death.
Look at Rashi.
No, didn't you just say that Tosfos?
According to Tosfos, if I do it all the time, I get poverty.
Right.
If I do it once, I die. Or twice, I die. If I'm mezalzel all the time, right? Twice is that. The end points out the word zilzul sometimes means habitual and sometimes means occasional. Right? That's the end of Tosfos. But what about Rashi, Chevra? Vashtein Rashi. Hamezalzel. Look at the Rashi. Whoa. What does Rashi say, Chevra?
Tamid.
Rashi says, Hamazaz means you always eat below Netilah Sidayim. So what happened to you? Chayiv Misa, you die. Right? According to Rashi, if you always eat without Netilas Yadayim, you die. What about the Gemara that says poverty? How do we answer that steer in the Gemaras?
That's when you habitually.
Maybe he does Rashi says habitually. Oh, so you're saying that maybe the Gemara in Shabbos means occasionally, and then maybe the machlokes is, this machlokes in the philosophers, about what's worse, life imprisonment or death. I don't think so. I don't think that's the issue. The Pshat in Rashi is probably Azoy Chevra. Rabbi Yaakov Emden writes in his notes in the back of the Gemara, since the Gemara tells me in Nidorim, Arba Chashuvim Meis, Ani Suma Metzaira Umishein Lobanim, right? Arba Chashuvim Kemeis. So therefore, maybe the Ani is the same as Misa. There's no Stira. Halacha views that there are different forms of Misa. Chashuvim Kemeis. Arba Chashuvim Kemeis. What about Nidui? So again, Rashi would probably say that Nidui is also like a different form of death. Since we explained that Nidui, Cheirem, is basically a curse that you should die, so according to Rashi, L'cha'ora, there's no stira in the Gemara. But, yes?
Really, Rashi could just be saying poverty.
Death and poverty is the same thing. Our Gemara uses a lashon nekar min ha'olam. The Gemara in Shabbos uses a lashon poverty. But fundamentally, the two Gemaras are saying the same thing. That if one habitually does not do netilas yadayim, so the person dies, but death comes in different forms. The halacha views poverty as a type of death.
But in the beginning of Rashi, when he said it's because you're like over on a
teravana. Right, so Rashi writes that over al divrei sefer mischayev misa, so you're asking a kasha. Ali Shav is asking how there's a stira minei ube in the two Rashi's. How can Rashi say the din is if I do a tamid, then I get this punishment? When the next Rashi says whenever I violate a din derabbanan I'm chayev misa. The Gemara says cham. That's your kasha. What? This is one of the oldest teacher's tricks ever. No, we like.
You sound really good. You're like,
oh. Oh, wow. That's what I said? That's awesome. How did I think of something so good? How did I pull that one off, right? So the pshat might be as follows, Chevra. I saw in the Sefer, I brought it over here, the Mishmanei Ha'aretz. It's a fellow, Breish, from Switzerland. His grandfather was the Chokas Yaakov, the Chuvas Chokas Yaakov. And this guy's still alive. He's like a Talmud Chacham, a Kol type of guy. He's a good guy. So, yes. So he points out Azai. You know, the Rambam tells me that whenever an individual violates an Isser Derabbanan, such person is in violation of Lo Sasur Min Hadavar She'agidu L'chayom En Usmol. The person is in violation of the Din D'Oraisa of Lo Sasur. The Pasuk and Pasha Shoftim. Comes along Nachmadis, and he jumps up and down, and he spits wood and nickels, and he says, my dear Rambam, what the heck are you talking about? If every time you violate a Derabbanan, you're in violation of Lo Sasur, so how come I have rules that's Suffik d'iraisa l'hachmir, suffik d'rabbanan l'hakel. Pardon me, l'cha'ora, even violating an iser d'rabbanan should be really bad. It should be lo sasur, it should be a d'iraisa. That's the Ramban's kasha. So the answer that many give for the Rambam is as follows. There are two ways of violating a d'rabbanan. You can violate a d'rabbanan just by not doing it. And in that case, taka, there's no lo sasur. Lo sasur means not to deviate from what the chachamim say. In other words, like the Mesha Chachm explains on that pasuk there in Parsha Shoftim, that you should not engage in merit against the rabbis. Don't rebel against the rabbis. Don't say, hey, you say that, fool on you. Right? You shouldn't say that. But merit against the chachamim is the real iser of lo sasur. Rebelling against the rabbis. If that's the case, so then we can explain Rashi and our sugya. The reason why you're chayiv misa is because the person is oiver al divrei chachamim. But oiver al divrei chachamim probably does not mean that on one occasion you don't listen to the rabbis, because the din of oiver al divrei chachamim is really when there is mered, is really when there is rebellion against the rabbis. Not listening one time doesn't show rebellion. However, if one habitually does not listen, so in that situation, that shows mered. Since that shows mered, that's why you're chayiv misa. That's probably the pshat in Rashi. Right? So Rashi is saying, enochanami, eiva divrei chachamim is chayiv misa. However, the chayiv misa only sets in when you know that you're being over as a way of rebelling against the rabbis. Theoretically, it's possible that you could be over one time as an act of rebellion. That certainly is possible. However, if you violate one time, it could be it's not an act of rebellion. But when someone is habitually violating a divrei sofrim, that tells me that such individual is actually rebelling against the chachamim. If such individual is really rebelling against the chachamim, so that is why they are chayiv misa, and that's the pshat in Rashi. This can explain, I didn't get to it, in the shir I gave this past Shabbos in Stern College. You guys know Stern College? Anyone heard of it? Like, it's whatever. It's Yeshiva University. It's like, I don't know what we're going to say about it. What's Yeshiva University? So now, this is on YouTube, right? I can really get in trouble. But I didn't say anything, so that's great. It's the best place ever. Fine. So now, we spoke on Shabbos about the din of Ein HaKadosh Baruch Hu Mevi Takola Yadehem. The Gemara has a concept that the Ribbono Shel Olam doesn't allow tzaddikim to be nichshol in averos. And we discuss in the context of like the muzzling of the sheep, right, in this past week's parasha, the Ramban comments that it can't be that the reason why Avraham Avinu / Eliezer muzzled the sheep is that they shouldn't be ro'ah b'stos acherim, because if the Ribbono Shel Olam isn't going to allow a takala to happen to the chamor for Pinchas ben Yair, so certainly Avraham Avinu is equally religious for Pinchas ben Yair. That's the Ramban's kasha. Part of that whole discussion that we didn't get to this past Shabbos is a famous Nesivos. The Nesivos is Rabbi Yaakov Loberbaum from the town of Lisa. The Nesivos in Chayshan Mishpatzim and Reish Lamedal and Sifkot and Gimel, Nesivos develops an idea that there is no punishment if a person violates an Issa D'Rabbanan B'Shogeg. If I violate an Issa D'Raisa, so there are dinim. If I violate B'Mezid, I could get Malkus, I could be Chayiv Misa, whatever it is. I violate B'Shogeg, I'm Chayiv Karvan Chatos. You violate an Issa D'Rabbanan, even b'shogeg, you did something wrong. Because an issa d'oraisa is fundamentally like poison. And if I violate an issa d'oraisa, so it's ke'ilu, I ingested poison, or I did an act that is a poisonous act. So it might not be as severe as if I would do it b'mezid, but if I do it b'shogeg, I also deserve some sort of punishment. However, the Nesivos develops a theory that if you violate an Iser D'Rabbanon B'Shogeg, you go off scot-free. And comes along Yom HaKippurim, you don't have to clap al chait. Right? This is like the biggest... Don't tell this to your students before Yom Kippur. Oh, by the way, you assume D'Rabbanon B'Shogeg? Right? Don't clap, right? Nothing wrong with that one. That's what Nesivos says. What's the cheshbon of the Nesivos? What's it coming from? So obviously what the Nesivos is getting at is that the yesod of Yisurim D'Rabbanon is the Ribbono Shel Olam wants us not to rebel against the rabbis. Don't do an act of mered, like what we're saying now from the Rambam and from Rashi. Consequently, if I violate an Issur D'Rabbanon B'Shogeg, there is no mered involved, no? I'm not rebelling. It's Shogeg. I accidentally, I don't know, eight demai. It's accidental. No avera whatsoever. Because the only time you violate an iser d'rabbanon is when it's an act of mered. By the way, the punchline to this whole Shtickel Torah is perhaps that's exactly the teretz to the Ramban's kasha on the Rambam. One of the kashas of the Ramban asks on the Rambam is, how come Safek Derabanan is Lahakel if there is Lo Sasor? The answer is that if it's a Safek Derabanan, so I'm not sure if the rabbi said that I should or should not do this, whatever the case is. So if I'm not sure if the rabbi said it, if I don't do it, or if I do it, if it's an act of omission, commission, however I want to say it, but if I don't listen to the rabbis when I'm not sure that they said it, that can't be merit. No? Suffolk, by definition, cannot be an act of merit. This, ladies, is what I call geschmack lomdus. Right? This is not bad. Right? So that's the pshat in Rashi. Again, Elisheva asked a very powerful stira in Rashi. So we're only doing this to like make Elisheva happy, but basically that's the yesod. Good? Okay, deep breath. Should we go weiter? So nekar min ha'olam. By the way, it's interesting. If you look in Shulchan Aruch in Simin Kuf Nun Ches Iftes, it says if a person's mezalz have been tzias yadayim, chayiv nidui, umisa, and you end up with anius. Shulchan Aruch has all three of them together. Is Shulchan Aruch passing like Rashi or like Taisus Chevra? Rashi, right. According to Tosfos, you can't have all three things in the same sentence. Because the word mezalzel means different things in different places. The fact that in Shulchan Aruch it says, again, I could get up and get the Shulchan Aruch off the shelf, but I'm lazy. But the fact that in Shulchan Aruch it says that if you are mezalzel and tzias yadayim, you get all three of these things. L'cha'ora indik, I'll get it up, I'll get it for you. Bye. Where's more Shulchan Aruch? Okay, Shulchan Aruch Arachayim, Mishnah Berurah. Maybe it's on the other side. They, no Mishnah Berurah here? Ask me. How can you have a room that has a Minchas Yitzchak that doesn't have a Mishnah Berurah? They have a Shmir Shabbos. They have that won't help me.
I have it on my screen here.
But yes, what does it say? Oh. Thank you. Let's say in Simon Kuf Nun Ches if test. Tzarech Yizoy have been in Tzilas Yadayim. Shekol HaMezals have been in Tzilas Yadayim. Chayev Nidui. Ubali De Anios V'nekar Min HaOlam. All three together. Thank you. Right? All three together. Why? Because Shulchan Aruch holds like Rashi, not like the Tosfos. Yes, Abigail.
Why, if it's true that all, for all Yisir Durabanon, you're Nekar Min HaOlam, why does it
Dafka say
about
the Zion? Yes, so that's a very good kasha. I don't know. I think according to Rashi, Enoch and Amir would be all Isurim Derabanan. I don't know why it says it specifically about Netilas Yadayim, but Enoch and Amir. By the way, this idea of Poreitz Geder Yishchenu Nachash is as follows. One of the responsibilities of the Chachomim is Asu Siyag LaTorah. That's a Mishnah in Avos. A Siyag is an Aramaic word for Geder. If you break through a Geder, so the Nachash gets you. HaKadosh Baruch Hu imposed a Geder. That Geder was that you're not even supposed to come close to the Eitz Hadas. If you appoint Geder, Yishchenu Nachash. Then the Nachash comes and gets you. No? Isn't that like Pashup Sham the Pasuk? Fine. Weiter.
It's only because she added
it's because she made too much of a Geder that's why it became a Poreitz Geder. Right. Correct. Okay, weiter. Okay, the problem is to do this next Gemara will require a little bit of more discussion than the couple of minutes that we have. So, I want to wish everybody a good yontif and enjoy Thanksgiving. Try to learn. Like, it should be a relaxed time, but try to. This sugya actually is a Mishnah in Perek Beis Mishnah Gimel of Yadayim. Look at the Mishnah with the commentary of the Rash. On the side, the Rash is the Rash of Shans. Shans is Sans, S-E-N-S. So the Rash was the third greatest of the Bali HaTaisus. He wrote a commentary on all the Mishnayos and Zra'im and Taharos. The Rash made Aliyah to Eretz Yisrael with that first Aliyah of the Bali HaTaisus that Professor Kannerfogel wrote about not so long ago. And everything connects, no? So the Rash, in his commentary on that Mishnah, Perek Beis, Mishnah Gimel of Yadayim, quotes Rashi, disagrees with Rashi, the Tosfos HaRosh over here disagrees with Rashi, and this is what we'll have to speak about next time, Chevra. Okay, have a good evening, a Freilichin Yontiv, and a Gesuntin, whatever.
And next Tuesday, we gotta hear your wife.
You have to hear my wife.
Oh, she's coming.
When she came?
Next Tuesday.
Oh, yeah?
You didn't even...
I did not know.
Cool. I didn't know.
Excellent.
We were having sheer dinner next Thursday.
Okay, sheer dinner. Let's just...